KPCW News Time now, 8:13. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the South Summit School District presented an overview to the public at last week's school board meeting. In the studio to update us on the plans to submit a multi-million dollar bond to voters in November, I have Superintendent Chad Sorensen. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. So the board's gone through a lot of master planning. That since that $58 million bond was defeated back in 2017. So the plan is to do what?
Absolutely. The plan is to respond responsibly to growth. And as we've talked many times, we're expecting a 48% increase by 2028. That's 2,500 students we'll be serving. And so the plan is to focus on building a high school in Camas for the ballot in November. And the estimated costs, and that's not doing anything more significantly than we were doing before, except for adjusting for a little bit of slight growth, would be $75 million, as anticipated and projected by Zions and our architects.
How come so much?
Just the change in construction costs. You've probably noticed it everywhere. The costs of steel, the costs of building material, and just the demand for labor and in the area in which we live.
Okay, so where's the other $15 million that you're talking about? If we're talking about a $90 million bond.
The other would be to build a school in Silver Creek area, an elementary school. At this point in time, those are both realistic needs. However, realistic and needs don't always match what the paycheck can afford. And so the board has given serious consideration to that. And they've decided at this point the focus needs to be first on passing that bond to build the high school and then working in the shortcoming to then build an elementary later in Silver Creek.
So the plan is to go to voters with a $75 million bond then in November?
Yes.
Okay. What have you guys figured out that that's going to cost the average homeowner?
Well, the average homeowner, and you have to use $438,000. Now, when people hear that, many of the property owners in Camas Valley, their value isn't there. And so they hear that, and it's kind of staggering. But it's state statute requires that you use that as your language on the ballot.
So the median, the average?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The average market
property value.
Mm-hmm. Right. So basically what the board has done, if they look at that, and for a $438,000, the annual amount for a family would be $494. However, the board's very concerned about that impact to our citizens, and to help minimize that impact to our taxpayers, the board is committed to contributing $1.25 million from our capital each year towards that bond payment, which would bring the tax impact down to $376 annually, which works out to be about $31 per month.
Okay. And again, it's going to be less than that if your property isn't valued at that much.
Yeah. In fact, I think Zions Finance reported to the public it would be about $86 per 100,000. So when people heard that, they weren't quite as alarmed as some of these staggering numbers that have been reported.
Yeah. So what you've learned, though, is that a third of all of the taxes paid to the South Summit School District are paid by the residents of Promontory?
Well, in that area, it's not residents of Promontory only. It is all those businesses that are located in that area. So they are very important to South Summit School District, and they have been a very large part of the educational opportunities that our students receive. And so we responsibly recognize our need as residents move into that area to provide high-quality education to them, as well as continuing those students over on the east side, the Camas side.
Yeah, so less than a quarter of the taxes, I think you also found out, are paid by full-time residents?
Correct.
So they're getting a pretty good deal.
They're getting a very good deal. Now, when it's coming out of your personal checkbook, it doesn't quite feel that way. But when you look at it from, as you're suggesting, it's a very good deal when second homeowners and the businesses are paying the largest portion of that.
Yeah, new growth. More than three quarters of.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the process. How are you getting this word out to voters?
So as a school district, we have a responsibility to educate and inform. And so we get out the facts. Now, community groups can organize, and my understanding is there is a group of political, they call them political interest committee, a group that is organizing that is pro for the bond, and I'm sure there's probably maybe another group that's against the bond. And so in addition to the facts that the school district will present through community meetings, town hall meetings, and open houses, people will also be hearing from those political interest committees. My only hope is that people truly look at the facts before they decide how to vote.
Yeah. So do you have a schedule of those meetings at this point?
We do. We have some that are coming up in the short term. April 16th, there will be a town hall meeting in Francis City Hall at 6:30. There will be a town hall meeting on Tuesday, April 23rd at the Oakley Town Hall. There will be one on Thursday, April 25th at the South Summit High School gym. And that meeting will also be streamed on Facebook Live. And then on Thursday, May 9th, all day long, there will be an open house at the district office where people can just stop in and visit with administration and board members and ask questions relating to how it will impact them personally or what the scope of the project could be.
Yeah. So what's the timeline on this in terms of the board actually has to vote on putting that bond language on?
The bond language will be voted on in the August meeting.
Okay.
And at this time, the board is committed to a comprehensive, complete high school in Camas, and then working with grants and private donations to move towards accomplishing some of the capital improvement projects and the need that we have in the Silver Creek area.
Okay, so are we just building a high school, or do we need to build now all of the athletic facilities as well? Is that where the high school games get moved to, and the locker rooms and track and field? And
yes, this will be a comprehensive high school, and that's one of the concerns of some of the community members saying, but we already have a nice stadium, and we do. The problem is when that stadium was built, we didn't have men's and women's soccer, we didn't have baseball, we didn't have softball, and we didn't have some of the intramural type of needs like lacrosse and rugby that some of our students are talking about. Our current facilities will not go underutilized. We need them, plus we need those that will be built with the comprehensive high school, just to cover the range of competitive events and little league programs, etc., that are involved in a community.
And what happens with the existing high school then?
The existing high school will become a 6-8 school. And that is the magic of building this new high school. We will take grades, we will continue to use all the buildings, and we will take grades from each of them and spread it out so it addresses growth for the entire district.
So your elementary grades are going to be what, preschool through?
It'll be pre-K through 2 and in the elementary. And then there will be a 3-5 school where the current elementary or current middle school is. And then a 6-8 school where the current high school is. So it really benefits all of our students.
All right. Then why the need for a new elementary in Silver Creek?
Well, because that will be to address the growth that's going to happen with this new community that is being built. It is projected that it will be the size of the valley and therefore need its own school.
Yeah. Will it eventually need its own middle school and high school as well?
Eventually it could. Now, we anticipate in the very short term that our Silver Summit Academy will continue to serve and meet the needs for the middle school and high school students.
Okay. But elementary then, are they also at the Silver Summit Academy?
They are. And they're already full. And as students come in, then we'll need that additional space.
Okay, so if the bond is approved, then you would, what, need to start construction on the high school 2020? It would be ready when?
It's typically a 2-year build-out. We are doing quite a bit of work now so that the voters know exactly what they're getting. There was a lot of rumors last time that there would be a covered football stadium and all of this state-of-the-art, unrealistic expectations. This will be a traditional school that will meet the academic needs and the extracurricular needs of our students, but will not be luxurious and Taj Mahal type of building.
Yeah. Park City has spent a lot of time on master planning. Basically, what they wanted to learn first are the kind of the future vision of learning. Have you guys even looked at that?
Absolutely. 21st century learning is our first and foremost priority. And we recognize that much of that will be hands-on, experimental, experiential type of learning. It will be very competency-based and personalized. And you need to have technology and collaborative space, and not just traditional classrooms, but classrooms that can be small group, back to individual, very functional type of furniture in open spaces.
So that's being planned for?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. We want state-of-the-art learning in this school.
All right. Let me see. Another business, a good legislative session for education?
Absolutely. The WPU, which is the weighted pupil unit, was funded at 4%, which is fantastic. And we are excited about that. In addition, money was given to what they call the teacher and student success. And you'll remember last year with the gas tax and some money was put aside to support education. And we were encouraged last year to use that as one-time money, which our district chose to. And then this year, they've added additional money to that. And so it's about $98.8 million ongoing funds in the Teacher and Success Act, which works out to be about approximately $100 per student. Now, the interesting thing about this funding is that there will be a district plan approved by the Board of Education, and then each principal is responsible for working with their stakeholders, parents, faculty, students, and putting together a plan for their school. So they are responsible for determining how to use this money, whether it's additional teachers or whether it's after school programming, etc. What is it that is needed in their building to move the notch academically?
Now, has the board started on the budgeting process?
We've had conversations and projected need, but we're just now getting the revenue part to start to be able to look at how those projected needs and increases in retirement and benefits will play into the positions that we'll be able to hire and the ongoing needs that we have.
Yeah, what about teacher negotiations and administrative negotiations?
The first meeting is scheduled for the month of April with both of those groups. In okay. our district.
So is it just a one-year contract that you have with them? Do you have to do this every year?
We do. We have negotiations each year in our shared governance model.
Yeah, so do you expect that to retain teachers and
Absolutely.
Recruit them, you're going to need to see?
Absolutely. We need to be competitive. And especially in our area with the cost of living, that is a high focus on a competitive wage so that they're able to live and work in the area.
Yeah, so are you expecting to see a tax increase then in the budget?
We are not. At this point in time, we, with the bond coming up, the board has not given any conversation to a tax increase.
Okay. Just real quickly, you recently held your Frontline Blue Line spring event. How did that go?
It was great. The information was fantastic, and we focused on screen time and online time, and so the parents that were able to be there heard a perspective that you hadn't always heard before. Sometimes we hear shaming for parents if they allow their youth to be online or screen time, and the message was really, what are they doing on that screen time? There's good screen time and there's bad screen time. So the focus was there, and then there was a lot of information on from the Summit County Sheriff's Department on vaping and the impact that it can have on the brain and the concern we have for the large number of students participating.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Chad?
You know, we just appreciate all that you do and the opportunity that we have to come and be able to share this information. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That's the superintendent of South Summit Schools, Chad Sorensen. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, for more than three decades, the Sweeney family worked to develop the 105 acres of Skiside property in Park City's Old Town. After failed negotiations and hundreds of hours spent in planning meetings, the Sweeney family and its partners agreed to sell the acreage to Park City for $64 million. With a successful bond election last November, that was accomplished. Earlier this month, the property and the money exchanged hands. In the studio with a look back, I have two of the three Sweeney brothers, Pat and Mike. Good morning to both of you.
Morning,
Good
Leslie.
Morning, Leslie.
So, Pat, you've always kind of served as a spokesman. We'll just start with you first. And are you happy to have this behind you?
It's good to get this done. It turned out very well, and it's a lot of work on a lot of people's part, and it's a nice ending.
Yeah. You guys are multimillionaires at this point. Now what?
We got to pay taxes.
Yeah, other than that, we're going to move ahead, and we still own the Townlift base. That requires a lot of participation on our part, and we have other interests in town, myself in particular. So they'll keep us busy, and then we'll see.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about some of that other property that you have. But, I mean, has this been kind of like winning the lottery? Are people, like, coming out of the woodwork to find you?
Mike, you can answer that. Nobody's found me.
No, I think the community has been very good to us in the sense that they understand that we're working hard. We preserve the property, and hopefully that preservation is in perpetuity. So the final thing from us is making sure the conservation easement on the property is put to bed.
Yeah.
And once that happens, then we'll be really happy about that.
Mike, you were someone who always believed that it was in the best interest of Main Street to have some kind of ski and ski out lodging there on the hillside. I mean, having the money change your mind, or do you think we've lost opportunity here?
Well, I don't think it's a lost opportunity. I think it's a different path to take. Now that we know for sure it's all going to be open space, there's ways of maintaining that open space that will be beneficial to Park City and to Main Street. I mean, my last 20 years has been spent on Main Street with the HPCA, the Chamber, working very hard to preserve the destination resort community. And I think with Vail and what they've been able to do, you know, the ridership at the Townlift is way up, that we will see additional activity on the hillside. I think the city and their trail management team will continue to work with Pat, or Pat will continue to work with them, and make that a very special hill. And the access will be through the Townlift. And we've preserved that view corridor in perpetuity.
So the Townlift base, again, Sweeney, what about the plaza, the Summit Watch Plaza area? Is that also?
That we own part of that. The Caledonian Condominium Association owns part of it. The Park City Mountain owns part of that. So we're kind of the centerpiece, if you will, and for years we've taken the lead in terms of taking care of it, maintenance, cleaning, that kind of thing. And of course the Park City Mountain's taking care of the lift operations and ski operations.
But you asked about Summit Watch, and so in specifically there are underlying agreements that are, how many years, 30 years old, Pat, now?
Yeah, there's a bunch of agreements that amongst a lot of property owners down there, including those I just mentioned, in the 820 building, Lift Lodge, they involve the original Summit Watch property. So those agreements are still in place. They're recorded. There's easements in place. And all those need to, you know, to be kept in mind and maintained. And you know, everybody needs to cooperate. And it will continue to work. I might mention the city also has agreements, not only through their approval responsibilities, but there's some easements or records that they're involved in. So it's a big joint effort down there to keep that open space and that functioning for everybody.
Yeah. So what other family properties do you own that still need to be developed?
Nothing that needs to be developed. I own a private lot that's up King Road, and you know, I've got the guest house built on that. I don't think I'm going to build any more than the guest house. Someday the main house will be built, I suspect. And as far as all of the properties that I can think of that we've owned, they're pretty much built out. The King Road Estate, we had an option on that years ago. They haven't completely built out, but it's restricted to a single family with a guest house. That's on King Road as well. And then there's one lot off of King Road that hasn't been built on. But otherwise, it's pretty much done.
So if you could go back to the 1980s and know what you know now, what would have been done differently from your perspective?
You know, that's always an interesting question. You know, what if you would have turned left and instead of right, or went to this job instead of that job? Hard to say. I think that I would have, you know, I probably wouldn't have been as brave personally about taking on complex situations, which our master plan was, and entering into the original agreements with Nick Badomini and the Park City Mountain, and taking on the complicated problem of having a commercial ability and residential a commercial building and a residential units and a ski base on the roof, parking below. That's a lot of moving parts. It's been very interesting, a lot of fun, but there's a reason they're strip malls. They're a lot easier. Lining up boxes and putting all the HVAC on the roof and the boilers and the heaters in the basement one unit at a time is a lot easier.
So in terms of what Park City's gotten out of this, I mean, do you think that this development has helped Park City have a better development process?
Park City, as in the city?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The municipal, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've obviously worked with a number of staffs, a number of planning commissions, a number of city council, a number of mayors. It's never an easy process because there's always so many options, and then also a lot of logs that come down the stream that get in the way, and you have to get over them. But all in all, I think as a group, we'd be happy with the way it turned out. We're certainly happy with the ski lift and the base, the town lift base, and happy to see the hillside preserved as open space. So we're happy. We got smiles on our faces because of that.
Yeah, so it was family-owned property for many years, and then you guys took on a partner. How come?
Well, you'd have to ask my dad, who's long gone. But he originally partnered up with some folks from Chicago that, as Ed and Mike and I got older, we got to know and really became pretty good friends with them. There were some bumps in the road in that relationship, and then they got to be about our age now, about 10 years ago, maybe it's longer than that now, and they wanted to sell out. So then they sold to Park City 2, which is a LLC from New York, headed by Elizabeth Radd, and that's how that happened.
Yeah. Well, you guys are getting older. Did you have the tenacity, you think, to see this through, had the bond not passed?
We better kept trying, that's for sure.
I mean, the thinking was that it was going to be a long, drawn-out process, no matter which way the Planning Commission voted on this, right? I mean,
yeah, I just like I mentioned, it's a complex, as the Townlift base area was, that hillside project was complex, but we would have kept trying for sure.
Well, I think that we got lucky that Jack Thomas and Andy Bierman stepped in. And with those two gentlemen working on behalf of the city and their long, long history that we've had with them, gave us the opportunity for us to deal with the city. And the city was very fair in the way that they approached it. The negotiations, which was really not a negotiations, Jack came in and said we'd like to buy the property, and we went through a few stages, and we said, okay, Jack, just make us an offer. Let's see what we can do. And Jack and Andy coming a little bit later, made it happen. So I thought without those two gentlemen working hard, we wouldn't have got over that hurdle. And then once we got over that hurdle, I think Mark Harrington, Matt Diaz, and Nate Rockwood are the key players that the city should be very happy that they have these gentlemen working for them and being able to really facilitate the deal and make it happen. Because if it wasn't for them, the details and Pat working with Pat, it would have never happened.
But yeah. what
throw the council in there. The council was very supportive.
Well, absolutely.
And other, as we know, a number of other members in the community, people.
So what changed, though? Because you were back in negotiations. I mean, that's when we changed the whole process, when we took the city council out of it so that the council could negotiate with you. How come that one didn't work?
That's history. I say, I don't know. I mean, it just didn't have the right components. My brothers and I maybe weren't in the right mindset. Elizabeth Rad didn't, you know, we didn't have Andy and Jack and all the people Michael mentioned and a lot of others in, at the city. Fortunately, it all got to a point where it made sense and everybody got on the same page.
It took a long time to cook the and bake the cake on this one.
Yes.
Well, and I guess does that have to do with maybe just your wisdom over the years? I mean, just, you know, the older you're getting, it was kind of like, you know what, now or never?
Well, yes, I think Pat and Ed and I got together on an occasion and we looked back and we just said, if we can put a deal together with the city, then we're going to do it. It's time has come. We've made the best that we could possibly do. It's in good, the property's in good shape. All of the little details that people don't realize that you have to go through to maintain a piece of property like we have, all of those pieces of the puzzle fit together. And then Pat, Ed, and Mike, you know, we decided that our time, we're done.
Many people have said that this project, in whatever approved form it was, could never have been built, just given all of the impacts that would have had to have been mitigated. You may have seen some development, but certainly not what we had seen up there. I mean, do you really believe that as the last drawings show, that could have been approved?
Well, I don't really. I think that's water under the bridge. But anything can get built, and I think we've seen a lot of projects that you wonder how they got built. They did. The economy was really strong, and there's interest in that kind of product out there. So, yeah, it could have happened. We agreed to go a different direction, and that certainly has worked out. We're really happy with that direction.
But your question is an interesting one. If you recall, there was nothing down on Lower Main Street below Heber Avenue. There wasn't even a Main Street. And we went through that same process when that area there and the town lift got approved. And that took years and years and years and years. That was the precursor to the Treasure project. Without that, that wouldn't have happened. But if my brother Pat hadn't worked with Nick Badami and with my dad, and we worked at the dinner table a lot of times, so there were some interesting discussions between the three of them, that wouldn't have happened. And so there's so much history that's gone by that now seems okay because Lower Main Street is functioning the way that we envisioned it, but it wasn't designed. Ultimately, the final design of Lower Main Street wasn't what we started with. So we had to go through that process.
And I agree that Lower Main Street finally does see some vibrancy to it, but I don't see that happening in the plaza. What needs to change there? And that's just the level above.
You're talking about the Summit Watch Plaza,
mm-hmm.
Right? Well, this is just my personal opinion, and that is that you created a box canyon. And that was due to the construction that was necessary to put in the hotel concept there where you wanted double-loaded corridors. I mean, back in the day, that was the model of how you built things that worked that way. And Pat hired a gentleman by the name of Eldon Beck, who was probably the premier developer person that looked at how to develop things. We had that as a village. That was the village was what we were contemplating, and not what actually happened when Marriott Corp stepped in and had to build what they had to, in the sense that that's what worked at that time. 30 years ago.
I remember sitting through all those planning commission meetings and city council meetings, and that's what we had talked about, was the sun-drenched plaza, and it just didn't happen.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It didn't happen. You're right. I said that part didn't happen the way we were talking about way back when.
Yeah. So where do you guys go now, professionally, personally?
Well, I retired from medicine 5 years ago, so that was a great career, and done with that. And Mike and I and Eddie are going to be busy taking care, being the caretakers, not everything, but looking over everything, and at the talent base. And right now we're trying to make sure that we box up the institutional knowledge that we have, not only of the town of base area, but the hillside and intervening properties and the underlying agreements, the town lift agreement, and make sure that the city's aware of that, that institutional knowledge with respect to their taking care of the properties that they now will be taken care of on the hillside, and that the Park City Mountain is aware of all the intricacies regarding the town left base, and then our job will be done.
Yeah, and for you, Mike?
I'm going to still be active on Main Street. I have been for the last 4 or 5 years helping people out. When somebody has a problem and they want something done, they'll come to me and ask me to help, and I think I have a very good relationship with the city staff. So I'm working very hard and I plan on for the next 4 or 5 years to keep that myself very active. I have a goal of every year trying to do 1 million vertical feet of skiing, so I'm going to work on that one.
Well, we should note, as large property owners, both of you, commercial business owners, you both get to help pay the bond off, so good for that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we do.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Nope. We've appreciated you, Leslie.
Absolutely. We've enjoyed our relationship with KCPW. And we want to thank the community. It was a little bit tough and go on certain times, but I think we have a wonderful community. We have a wonderful city council, and I think we've got a great direction that we're going to go in, and that we would like to help continue to participate in that endeavor.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you,
Pat and Mike Sweeney. With the announcement that the Summit Land Conservancy has raised the money to purchase the conservation easement for the Oscar Thorpe Ranch, the clock's still ticking to raise the final funds for the 19-acre Armstrong Snow Ranch pasture there at the base of Thanes Canyon. On the phone, I have the executive director of Utah Open Lands, Wendy Fisher. Good morning to you, Wendy.
Good morning, Leslie.
So where are we? How much left to raise?
We still have $1.47 million left to raise.
And March 31st is a Sunday, so is the deadline Friday or Monday?
Well, actually, one of the things that we're happy to announce is that the family has granted us an extension until June 30th of this year, which is a huge relief from our perspective. We have several grants that are still outstanding that we've asked for about $650,000 through that. And then there are some grant opportunities, some windows that open starting April 1st. So, the family, we're first and foremost really grateful to the family. Not only are they granting this extension, but I think as all of your listeners know, they, of course, donated a huge amount of the value of this. They've donated over 2/3 of the value of the conservation easement. So we're hoping that with this extension, we'll be able to bring in those final dollars.
So the family must feel pretty good about you securing the rest of the money for them to go through. And you gave them that optimism?
I think the family is a family that has been in Park City for a long time. The Armstrong family came to the area back in the 30s, and they care about this community. And I think that, first and foremost, is why they granted the extension, because they have as much optimism and hope that we will get this done as we do. And there's been a lot on people's plates, as you mentioned at the opening of this. There's been a lot of fundraising that has been needed over the last little while. And so I think all of that put together, we are really hopeful that the community can continue to rally and that we can get some substantial contributions from various different foundations. It's going to take every dollar. It's going to take every day. It's going to be a constant push to try and get this done. But there's no question that the Armstrong family has just been really tremendous as we work through this process and trying to give us every opportunity to get this done. And again, we look at it from the perspective that 77.7% of the voters voted for this when they voted for the Treasure Hill project. And so from that perspective, we know that this is something the community is deeply tied to and invested in as well. And so we have an attitude right now that we just can't fail. We have to make this work, but it's a big number.
Well, I just had two of the Sweeney brothers on air.
Did you ask them?
They just pocketed several million dollars with the sale of Treasure Hill. Have you hit them up?
You know, wouldn't that be a fairy tale ending? I mean, you've got two families, the Sweeney family, that has been in town here, I think, since the 50s. That would be a fairy tale ending, but haven't done that at this point.
Now, Summit Land Conservancy was running full-page ads in the local paper. They had spots here on KPCW to push this Oscarthorpe parcel. I haven't seen that same kind of effort for the Armstrong property. How come?
It's something that we're actually moving forward with now. Again, I feel like there has been a lot on people's plates. We've really been focusing on trying to get some large donors and trying to work on some of these foundation requests. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that. I think we all, as we work through these funding opportunities, we all try to be, you know, respectful of where everybody's at. All of these projects are important projects and they need to get done. And we have a hearty congratulations for the Summit Land Conservancy in getting the Oscarthorpe saved. Now that that is off of the collective plate, you know, we hope that people will turn their focus and their attention the Armstrong Stone Ranch pastures.
So you see that helping you now that Oscarthorpe is secured?
I think it's a really positive thing, and I think that it does help, because I think that that puts a lot of people's attention on, okay, where do I put my dollars? And I think that, you know, I even saw one of the Summit Land Conservancy's final mail that they sent out saying, you know, hey, and if you miss the deadline for Oscarthorpe, send it to Armstrong Stone Ranch Pasture. So I think what we see in all of these things, we saw it with Bonanza, and certainly it's no different here. This is going to take the village to really get this protected. And again, what an amazing opportunity. This is a piece of property that has remained virtually the same since the 1870s when miners were homesteading the area. So I think that this is one of those iconic pieces of property that we will all be remiss if we are unable to save it.
Wanted to ask you, in terms of with the legislative session just ending, any legislation that impacted the work you do?
Well, of course, there was $2.7 million that the governor had requested within his budget for the Lee Ray McAllister Fund. That actually was a direct request from a legislative task force that Utah Open Lands chaired over the summer for watershed protection. And then there was also a bill that came up for outdoor recreation. And this was a key one, Leslie, and that was with respect to the fact that the governor's Office of Outdoor Recreation has grants to establish new trails and new trailheads. But they are not allowed to utilize that funding for trail maintenance and trailhead maintenance. And that's one of the things that you see all over, even in some of the Forest Service areas. Once you put these trailheads in and these trails in, as Park City really knows well, you have to continue to maintain these. And so there was a $1 million request for that I believe did pass.
Okay. In terms of the open space funding, I mean, was the Leroy McAllister that was taken away, is anything reestablished for that?
Well, that's what they had looked at for with respect to the watershed funding. And really, it came out of the previous legislative session. It wasn't as directed towards Leroy McAllister as it was towards some of the private property conflicts that they are having on the Wasatch Front within the Little Cottonwood and Big Cottonwood Canyon. That was the subject of several bills that had moved forward the previous legislative session, and part of the way to solve that was to put some money towards purchasing private landscapes within the watershed area.
Okay. Utah Open Lands has also been hired to write the conservation easement for the Bonanza Flat area. Where are we with that process?
So I think that as your listeners are aware, there have been several meetings that took place with technical and jurisdictional stakeholders, and that involved everything from the nonprofits that were involved in the efforts to raise money for Bonanza to the entities like Wasatch County, Summit County, and Salt Lake County that were also involved. And so we've been working diligently through that. The conservation easement is in a final draft. We also have the management plan that is a part of that effort as well, and that is in a final draft. So we hope to be able to move that forward with the city. There's still been some lingering issues that we've been dealing with through the winter, watching once again how people are utilizing that landscape. And I think KPCW has covered some of the issues that have been occurring with access and snowmobiles. And I think we're really at a good place now. So we hope that's coming forward in April.
Okay. So that winter access then has worked well now that we've kind of got it marked?
You know, I was up on the property just last week looking at things. And, from my perspective, it does work well. I'm sure that there are many people who have their own opinions on it. But I think I went back to the notes that I had taken in interviewing the different homeowners associations that are up there. And far and away, their concern was, we can use the existing road infrastructure, the Garzon Pass Road, but when there are safety issues, the cut in the hill that people commonly refer to as Jeep Hill really becomes the safety corridor. And, you know, from what I saw, it seemed like people were really able to use that and that worked out.
Okay. Again, June 30th, the new deadline to raise the $1.47 million for the Armstrong Snow Ranch pastures. Anything else, Wendy, you wanted to mention?
Just that everybody that contributes to this effort needs to know that it makes a huge difference. It makes a difference to the foundations when they can see how many people have contributed. And so even beyond the dollars that can be contributed, it's the number of people that step forward and say, we want to make sure that Armstrong Snow Ranch Pastures is protected. So we really appreciate the number of people that participate in this effort, and we hope more will.
UtahOpenlands.org. Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you.